You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 83. Today is Thursday, January 5th, and we got a little bonus episode from Wins Above Fantasy. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. You guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I am at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. We're talking early ADP takeaways, Steve, kind of nitpicking some potential risers and fallers. Going to be a lot of fun. I know we got tagged in to basically pinch hit this week, but couldn't be more happy to jump on and get in the little back-to-back weeks with you, man.
Yeah, I think it's fitting. It's kind of like our podcast spring training, right? Like we're starting to ramp up, stretch out and up the innings and things like that. I know you jumped in an NFB 50 with I think Adam or Yancey.
I missed Adam's league, but yeah, I'm officially in my first league. Just gotta have the draft next.
My first draft, official draft of this season starts today as this comes out on the 5th. The On the Wire Listener League with Adam Howe. So that's exciting. We're in the early stages of our minor league draft for that dynasty startup that we talked about. So I think it's fitting that we stepped in and did a back-to-back week back on a weekly episode to kind of get back in the swing of things, especially now that draft season's kind of kicking off.
Yeah, totally. I've got the KDS settings lined up. My league is 10 out of 12 teams filled, so I should be shortly behind you, Steve, on the first official draft. But I know we got our Dynasty League as well, where we're doing kind of our first-year players or prospects minor draft, and then we got the majors for our Keeper League. So that will be a fun kind of side topic at some point for a show. But out of the gate, pretty fun going Miguel Vargas and following up with Andrew Painter. I know you're feeling good about the pop in the draft room on that, Steve.
Oh, yeah. Talked about that a lot and definitely got that feeling when, you know, there was five other guys that jumped in and said, oh, nice pick. You know, I would have went Painter there. Oh, man, can't believe that those two just went. So if anything, that's a success, and that was fun. But we're going to talk about him on the show, but not only for dynasty purposes, but I think Andrew Painter could be really useful and a sneaky sleeper pick for redraft in 2023. But that's just a little teaser. We can get into that now. I know you've talked a bunch about Miguel Vargas, how excited you are for there. So I think we got, you know, not only good prospects, I think the stipulation was that they had 150 plate appearances or at bats, just because Fantrack doesn't track plate appearances, oddly enough. So Vaughn Grisham was a nice little sneak in there because I think most people just didn't think he was eligible. So mid second round, nice little pick there by former guest of the pod, Grant Washburn, or friend of the pod. He was on an episode of Wins Above Fantasy back in the day. To snag Vaughn Grisham there because he got under the at-bats threshold. If it was plate appearances, he would not have qualified. That's how close he came, which is crazy and a sharp pick by him. But a long-winded tangent of saying, I think that we got two guys that, even though they're minors eligible, I think they could be, you know, helpful to a win-now team, which I think is kind of the sweet spot that you want to hit in most dynasty drafts, especially for startups. But really, really excited that we were able to snag those two players on our first official WAF dynasty team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's always great to have the proximity play. And yeah, Grant Washburn. Yeah. Shout out on that. That was savvy, Grant. And yeah, we're today talking about ADP, but a little bit more on the redraft side where, you know, it's at this state where you start seeing risers and fallers out there on Twitter. Again, we know that drafts are kicking off. But Steve, before we get into the names, because we'll get into plenty of the names, let's start high level, talk about kind of the drafts that have happened so far, and then we'll get into some early takeaways. But overall, just give us a rundown, Steve, because at this point in the season, you kind of have different makeups of drafts based on the NFBC, different formats. I know, you know, we typically like the best balls instead of mock drafts because you basically just draft your team and hold the players, and there's a little bit less management and monitoring that you have to do all year. It's a fun way to just kind of get some, you know, get some investments out there, start figuring out who your guys are, all that good stuff. But this year, I feel like I'm hearing so much about the gladiator format. So talk about kind of the drafts that have been made up this year and also some of these formats out there.
Before getting into that, this is not really a breakdown of the drafts or anything. It's just a nice little nugget. But there's this new on the ADP section of NFBC, you could actually have a draft board.
I was wondering about that, dude, because you linked that, and I was like, "This is a nice little view."
I went to the ADP and I clicked on that, and I'm like, "Wow, this is definitely new. This is awesome." I know we sort of get on NFBC because their app takes about a half an inning to load sometimes.
Desktop, but
for sure. But this is an awesome little thing that they came out with, and you can see a nice draft board with all the color coded stickers, and it's just a cool way of looking at ADP, especially, you know, if you're looking like round by round. That's they have that way to look at it. You know, it's tough. It's like, okay, this is it's hard to sometimes do the math in your head like quickly. You're like, oh, what is ADP 75? Like, you could see it like right now, oh, that's okay, in a 12-team league, that's the beginning of the seventh round. Yeah. It's a really neat way. So shout out to NFBC for that cool tool. I thought it was really cool when I clicked on it. I could link it in the show notes as well, along with the standard link to NFBC ADP. I know it's sometimes tricky to get there through like their menu navigations, especially prior year to ADP, but I digress. And I think this is just an important thing to note too. It's so easy to quote ADP, and lots of people do it, but what makes up that ADP is super important. Like, you need to know what drafts went on, because a main event, or TGFBI, which is a standard weekly fab format with seven bench spots and weekly moves and Friday hitter moves, is a lot different than Draft Champions Best Ball, where you're just sort of setting your lineup each week, or not even setting a lineup each week, where it just picks your lineup and there's no fab and you draft whatever 50 players. So similar to NFBC 50s, where there's no fab and you just set your lineups, but there are roster moves. So all of these formats are important to consider. Right, like there's only been two online. I think those are online championships. Correct me if I'm wrong. There's been five cut lines, which is kind of the hybrid best ball with those two fab period moves. What Raz Slam mimics itself off of. I know we've done a few cut lines before. I love cut lines. I'm not very good at them, but I do love them because it's that nice. Okay, hey, it's only two fab periods, and then you don't have to set your lineup. And then what there's been the most of. So there's been 184 drafts that have taken place. There have been 95 gladiator drafts, which is a new format this year, and I absolutely love it. I am definitely going to sign up for one. I think there still should be some throughout draft season. But what this is as simple as you can get. It's 23 roster spots, no fab, no moves, and that's kind of why it's a gladiator. You have to just survive those injuries. You can't make any moves. There's no, it's not like an NFBC 50s where you just have that super deep bench that if someone does get hurt, there'll be an automatic person that'll plug into the lineup with the algorithm that fills your roster. No, NFBC Gladiator is just, not a deep bench, and you just got to survive. I think it's a really, really cool format, and obviously it's pretty popular considering that 95 of the 184 drafts that have taken place, so more than half essentially have been those. So
let me test a theory here. Yeah. So I mean, it stands to reason that only 23 roster slots and you got to keep all year, there's going to be a little bit of a tax on durability.
Absolutely.
So for some of the injury risks, like who's a good, I mean, it's interesting, like Jazz Chisholm's ADP is 52 in Gladiator, and across all leagues, it's 50. So that's pretty minor. But who are some other, like, pretty wobbly, you know, profiles that we could see if you know, they're getting docked in a Gladiator league?
I mean,
like maybe Eloy?
Okay, I could filter on just Gladiator drafts right now. You could do that also on NFBC.
Yeah, so Eloy's about 82 on Gladiator.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to get into it. I put him on the rundown, but Fernando Tatis is 23. Like, he's missing a month of the season.
Wow, yeah.
You don't have a roster spot to fill in there. He's an injury-prone player, but I guess it's outweighed by the fact that it's still technically a best ball, right? And if Tatis is Tatis for 5 months, or, you know, four of the 5 months of the year, whatever it is, five of the 6 months, it's going to be huge.
Is there an overall prize on the Gladiator?
So that's actually a really good question. I'm looking at the rules. Prizes. So if you win your league, you get 250. If you come in second, you get 125, and yes, there is an overall, which also plays into the to the Fernando Tatis. That also is a big thing to consider with drafts. Leagues with overall, you're going to take more risk to try and go for that overall prize. The overall prize is $7,500. So entry fee is $50. So I'm definitely going to do one or two of these. That's good. I best ball isn't my best strength, but this is just too cool of a format to pass up on. And it gives out overall prizes all the way down to 25th. So pretty cool. But there's obviously a lot of players already. I mean, there's been 95 drafts. There are 15 teams. So that's how many entries, right? 95 times 15, if I can enter it in my calculator. So there's already 1,400 entries, 1,425 entries. So it's going to be a really popular and obviously extremely difficult to win that overall. But still, hey, you quadruple your money if you come first in your league, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a great format. I need to try to sneak one of those in as well. And then, not to put you on the spot, Steve, but I'm just kind of putting on my, you know, for the non-industry players, because this time of year is when we start getting more and more listeners for, like, typical, you know, Yahoo or CBS leagues, whatever they are. The best NFBC ADP to look at, if, you know, to try to remove the noise, I guess. I mean, TGFBI makes...
Yeah, I would do TGFBI because...
Once those roll around, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the main event obviously is like the best players, but there is that overall factor that makes it slightly different. But I would look at like the main event or TGFBI, something like that, to mimic sort of... the like best ADP for, yeah, standard, yep. ADP. I mean, you could also, you know, whatever site you're looking at, like, I know those ADPs aren't always the best, and they're kind of buried in how, you know, Yahoo or CBS just ranks the guys, but look at that and then kind of look for outliers. I know Gray over at Razzball does an article basically against, like, Yahoo ADP, ESPN ADP, CBS ADP, and, like, basically hands picks, like, whoa, what is going on here? Like, why is, you know, Michael Harris ranked 200 and then therefore his ADP is 50 spots lower than where it would normally be, mm-hmm. Over at NFBC or, you know, at Razzball or something like that. So pay attention to that. I think it's a nice way to sort of, you know, beat the draft room, quote unquote, if you know someone that a player that's just ranked lower for whatever reason. But yeah, to answer your question, I would look at like main event and TGFBI. TGFBI happens, I think, towards the end of February, so like beginning of March. They'll be out, and then most of the main events take place in March. I mean, I would also just sort of use a date range too, right? Like, I would look at like the middle of February to the middle of March to get like a good, okay, like these are mostly standard drafts with weekly fab, whereas now it's going to skew towards best ball. So keep those things in mind.
All right. Well, shifting back to kind of the ADP boards as we're looking at them today, these are all drafts. And I think that there is, you know, like Gladiators, honestly, kind of an interesting one because on one hand, you're knocked for durability if you're kind of a fragile player. But on the other hand, those players typically tend to be the boom bust ones, like a Chisholm or like Tatis, like we were saying. But looking at all drafts right now, just the high level takeaways, I mean, certainly compared to our pitcherless mock draft, Steve, where, you know, it's a mock. We wanted to draft guys that we were excited talking about. Relievers or closers were pushed down. I think the first one might have gone in the fifth round. We are definitely seeing more of the same in terms of the tax on elite closers. So maybe give us a rundown of kind of the early board as it relates to closers and what your kind of diagnosis is on what it's going to mean for your drafting.
If you want, you know, one of the elite closers, which I think might sort of fall off, at least ADP wise, at Ryan Pressly, or, you know, you can kind of go a little later to Ryan Helsley, you have to spend a top 70 pick currently, which is asking a lot. You know, that's the top six round pick in a 12 teamer. Currently in 12 teamers by ADP, Edwin Diaz and Emmanuel Clase are both going inside the second round. Diaz's ADP is 22, Clase at 24. So yeah, it's expensive to get a high end closer. Again, it's his NFBC that, you know, there's not as many fab periods, you know, something where you have daily fab, where you're able to pick up a closer, first come first serve or something like that. That changes a lot of things. There's always going to be an extra tax on closers in NFBC format. So keep that in mind. But
and maybe catchers a little bit. I feel like that happened last year when I was looking at like kind of general, you know, outside of NFBC drafts, it seemed like I never had to go as early on catchers because of that scarcity. But yeah, definitely on relievers, there's seven in the top 70 picks right now. And I would be shocked if by the time like home league drafts roll around, it's anywhere near that clip. But the idea still holds true from last year that if you want one of the set it and forget it guys that are elite, then you really got to pay up. So in your league, Steve, I mean, we just did our lessons learned, New Year's resolutions. I know we said that we wanted to secure one, but I mean, what feels like the spot where you're going to jump in?
I guess, you know, the Bautista, Iglesias, Helsley, I'd probably pass on Jansen just because I think the skills are shaky, but Doval, even though, you know, is Doval going to be the full-time closer in San Francisco? Probably, but I don't know. But maybe I would try to grab one of those in NFBC formats just because there's kind of a decent fall-off. I mean, I really like David Bednar, which is a much more palatable cost at pick 107, but is David Bednar going to be on the Pirates and going to be a closer come March? I don't know. So that's a decent risk. I think I kind of like the second tier range with like Daniel Bard, Clay Holmes around pick, you know, 100, 120. That might be an area that I shop in. You know, and sort of pass on maybe someone like a Felix Bautista, because I can only see his ADP going up. I know we have some risers there, but I'll add Felix Bautista to that list.
Yeah, I could see that too. I think When we talked last show, we were kind of in the, on the same page. I think we were saying around like 70 to 120 range, not really paying up for the elite. So, yeah, I think that makes sense. And those guys, Class A and Diaz, leaping into the second round have, you know, consequently pushed some top bats out of the second round, which we'll talk about as well a little bit later. But first, we are going to take a quick ad break and we'll be right back. All right. So, Steve, any more takeaways? I mean, I know we're always looking at the SP landscape. How are you feeling about kind of the SP shy top of the draft this year and just pitchers in general?
It's interesting. There's not a pitcher being taken until pick 16 at Corbin Burnes. Garrett Cole is right behind him. But it seems like the run for starters happens a little bit after that, from like round 3 to round 6-7 in a 12-teamer. So from like pick 30 to 80, most of the SP ones, quote unquote, go. And I think this year I'm going to want to get one of those back end SP ones from like,
There's so many anywhere
from like Rodon to Alek Manoah. Like, count me in on any of those guys as my first pitcher. Or Rodon, for reference, is at pick 53, and Manoah is at pick 68. So, yeah, you know, and guys in there are like Julio Urias, Zach Wheeler, Max Scherzer, Shane Bieber, Luis Castillo, Max Fried, Kevin Gausman. Those guys, they're back end SP ones, but those are bona fide SP ones. So. I like that. And then there's another really, really nice run from like pick 80 to 120 where totally. I think I might try and double tap and identify those guys that are being drafted as SP2 threes that I think could be SP1s, like, you know, George Kirby at 105, even like Luis Severino, Nestor Cortez at 118, 120. Those are really, really good values. And I like a lot of names there. So, If this holds, and I think it should, maybe, you know, it's more of a general range, so some names might come in and out of there, but it seems like those might be the SP clusters, and that's kind of where I want to shop. Back end SP1s, and then load up on these high upside guys being drafted SP2, threes, and try to pick a few winners out of there.
Yeah, I could really see myself doing a double tap between that same batch you're talking about, where, you know, I could see myself with like a Gausman Christian Javier combo, which would have to be back-to-back picks. Or the more I'm spending time with Manoah, the more I'm kind of warming up to that ADP that's kind of higher than some of his stuff was last year. I know he's kind of a volume workhorse and the K's should kind of tick back up, but I could see like a Manoah Musgrove or a Gausman Javier. Like, I really like kind of that back-to-back. And then, you know, we're both on the record saying we like McKenzie. Tyler Glasnow's right there. So yeah, I think I'll probably skip on that first group because there's not necessarily the elite. And honestly, I'm kind of surprised that Garrett Cole and Corbin Burnes are getting a little separation now. At the start of the draft season, you had to go all the way to like, I mean, I know ADP-wise, these guys are still at pick 16 and 19, but I'm a little surprised that they've moved ahead of like a Paul Goldschmidt or an Austin Riley, who, you know, Mike Trout is going after those guys. Like, man, those seem like such top-tier hitters to be going after Cole and Burnes, and that's not to mention the ones going right after him, which is like Pete Alonso, Rafael Devers. So I'm a little surprised that Cole and Burnes are moving up. I won't be mad if it happens, because I think that's even better for that whole hitter philosophy. If you're in like the sixth slot or the fifth slot, and then you can wait and jump in on that 30 to 80 range that you're talking about for pitchers.
I think there's just players that have success taking a pitcher in the first round or a pitcher super early. So can't argue with it if it works. So I think that's kind of... I feel like the starters sort of always creep up as more drafts get on the board, and you know, maybe it's a product of the best ball overall type of thing too. For ADP with pitchers, but I think I could see Burns creeping up to the back end of the first round as we get into full fledged draft season.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it for sure. But let's transition over to some of the players, Steve, and maybe if you want to start with one that you're feeling is getting drafted a little too early right now.
I talked about it last week, so not to beat a dead horse, but I just cannot believe Bobby Witt Jr. is going with the seventh overall pick. I think it's a product of round numbers. Like, it's a round number syndrome. It was 20 homers, 30 steals, which are amazing, but he was essentially league average with the bat, like I said, a 99 WRC plus, a 722 slug. I just, no matter how many steals a guy gets, like, I do not feel comfortable. I don't want a guy in the first round that has like a low 800 OPS. Like, I want that to be closer to 900, just because, with that comes extra base hits and RBIs and homers and runs. Like, for a guy to have a 722 OPS, you need to ask a lot to happen with the bat for him to justify the seventh overall pick. And, Bobby Witt Jr. is easily a guy that can make me eat my words and look foolish. And, he might be going, he has the potential to go 1-1 next year, right? Like, he could be that good. That's how talented he is. I loved him coming up. I stashed him in a league where he didn't come up in 2021, but, felt the upside justified that even to hold him all year. But I think the peak might be a little bit further away, just kind of like the Kansas City Royals team as a whole. I like it in 2 to 3 years, but I don't know if, I'll let someone else reap the benefits if Witt is that top first round talent. I'm going to pass there at pick seven. Like, I couldn't pass on Soto or Betts or Alvarez or even Vlad Jr. At pick seven to hope that Witt takes that next step with the actual bat. I know all the other raw tools are there, but it's too risky for me in the first round.
Yeah, no arguments for me. I mean, on the pitcherless player page, his X average is 236 underneath that 254, so looked even worse there. The hard contact is right around league average, a little bit higher, 8.5% barrel, solid. But maybe one bright spot is that he actually, even with the 30 steals, he got caught 7 times. So the intention to run 37 times with the bigger bases and everything, I mean, I could see him going berserk with, like, the homer to fly ball rate was a little bit low. Maybe he's 23 homers, 37
not
steals,
a good not
something
a good park
like
to hit homers in. And
that's,
I know,
true.
Like, I don't think he has the raw power of like a Sal Perez, right? Like, I know Witt definitely has like 30 homer power, but does he have like that 40 homer power? I know that came in a rabbit ball season, or not when the ball wasn't dead, at least the monster Salvador Perez year. So it's early. I love Witt long term, just not at this price this year.
Yep. And I think moving down the board, I mean, you brought up Fernando Tatis Jr. I think that's another really good one to call out. The fact that he's going to miss a month out of the gate. Once he's back, there's definitely questions about if he can stay on the field. He has not been kind of the image of durability. And yeah, overall, I mean, you can't argue with how much of a freak of nature he is when he's actually healthy and playing. So this one is kind of a head scratcher, but maybe, like we discussed, this could look a lot different in kind of non-industry drafts because people might be swinging for the fences, if you will.
And he had the motorcycle accident last year, right? And needed wrist surgery. And then once the suspension sort of was announced, he had shoulder surgery in early September. So since the last time Tatis has played, he's had a wrist surgery and shoulder surgery. On top of that, he is missing a month of the season because of the suspension. I think this is more risky than like the Bobby Witt Jr. pick. Like, you know, past me would have been oozing at this upside. It's like, oh my gosh, like I have the chance to take Tatis at 20 overall. He was the first overall pick a year ago, or, you know, going to the drafts a year ago, whatever it was. This is just too risky in the early rounds for me with all of those factors. Again, like, let someone else reap the benefits if they get, 40 homers and 25 steals and from May to September for Tatis. Like, good for you, but I am not going to take that risk this early. Just not even with the suspensions. Like, the guy has had two major surgeries on his wrist and shoulder, like, which are super important things to for hitting and hitting for power since the last time he's played. So just on that alone, I think it's hard to justify the spending a second round pick on Fernando Tatis.
So what's our over under on games played with Tatis Jr.? I know it's a ridiculous game to attempt to play, but I mean, are we thinking with all the injury risk, like where would you throw the dart? 115?
So he automatically misses 30-ish, right? Or what? I mean, there's an actual, I think it's like 28 games, right? Like, he misses 28. Sure. I think that's the number. So, I mean, with the wrist and the shoulder, they're going to want to give him some rest, and like, they have, you know, bigger picture, but bigger playoff aspirations with all the money that they've spent, mm-hmm. and moves that they made, and like, they have the lineup depth with Soto and Machado.
Maybe he DHs though.
Yeah, the DH is there definitely. And you know, they want him to, who knows, he might even be like a full-time outfielder, come, when he's back in late April, early May. I was going to say like 100. So like, if he has 140 games, just eligible to even play this year, or like 135 games, like, is, you figure there's five of those that are like maintenance days. Like, you know, is there one IL stint, and it's close to that, right? Mm-hmm.
For the reason I ask,
two
is
major
because,
surgeries.
Yeah, Steamer's got him at 125, which I think anybody would be happy with.
And
with the 125 is 37 homers, 20 steals, 92-94 on runs and RBIs. With a .283 average. Like, he is so good. He's like the new DeGrom of hitters.
Yes.
But I'm with you. It's too early. This is too early in the middle of the second round. But I'm kind of looking like, I think it'd be hard for me. Like, Marcus Simeon's going at 38. Like, that starts to get into the range where I'd be pretty tempted. Of course, we're going to be watching how, you know, physically, how Tatis is. You know, in the preseason,
yeah,
and on Twitter and everything.
This could shoot up if he's like has a monster spring training, right, and looks super healthy, and eases all of those concerns. Like, even if he does have the April wash through the suspension, like, people won't care if he looks the part. So,
yeah,
could be even costlier.
Yeah, that's a good point, because can Tatis Jr. actually participate in spring training?
I believe so. I think you can.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Even with the suspension, it's just the regular season games.
Okay. Well, yeah, that will be one of the
and
the
there's
top
the World Baseball Classic too, right? I'm assuming he's going to play for that if he is healthy. I mean, I don't know. Like, he had shoulder surgery in September, right? Like, is he even going to be healthy when he comes? You know, like, is he healthy when he when he comes back? It's 4 to 6 months was the estimate when the injury happened. So like, his spring training could be delayed. So I would be surprised if he plays in the WBC. But you know.
Yeah, it's a good one. I think, yeah, we'll talk more about where we're kind of jumping in, but I think that, it's going to be tempting if it's as late as like the fourth round, which we've seen him go. So now let's kind of shift gears a little bit, Steve, and to the positive side. And let's hear about Mr. Andrew Painter, who you kind of teased at the start of the show. You and I got into the draft, and I kind of cited the old adage of no such thing as a pitching prospect. And you said, listen, I understand, Van, but this is an exception. I'm planting my flag. Andrew Painter is the real deal. I gave it a quick Twitter video search and looked at some of the numbers, and it didn't take too much to sway me. But talk to me about Andrew Painter. The Phillies obviously making moves to push for a window here. Once Bryce Harper's back, Trey Turner, a lot of good vibes going on. Got Wheeler and Nola as well. Is Painter the real deal? What can we expect here? And talk to me about the ADP.
Yeah, it was my New Year's resolution, man. I'm following through. One episode in, sticking with it, right? I'm like the guy at the gym the first week of the year. Don't be constrained to your rules that you normally follow. Like, there's always exceptions. I think my direct quote was, I'm the number one believer in Tinsnap. There's no such thing as a pitching prospect. One of the best acronyms in baseball, second to Tootblend, thrown out on the base pass like a nincompoop. Andrew Painter, I think, is the exception to that rule. And I think that, that 564 ADP, if you could get him at that price in drafts now, I think he would every single time. Philly's going all in. He pitched at three levels last year, single A, high A, and double A, and crossed the 100 innings threshold across those three levels and was absolutely dominant at every single level. He had a ERA below 2.54 at every stop, and it was a decent sample at each side. At each stop, it was 28 innings at double A, 36 at high A, and 38 at single A, or low A. The strikeout numbers were ridiculous, all above 34%. Didn't walk many guys, just has insane stuff. Like, you watch the video, it has the super high fastball with ride, this snapping breaking ball, like absolutely, everything mm-hmm. that you want to see. And I think curveball slider combo.
He looks so smooth, was one thing I noticed, Steve. And like, what's his height?
He's 6'7. 6'7. 6'7. Like, he looks.
And he just looked, yeah, like his mechanics did not look mm-hmm. like jerky or anything. Yeah. And I think, like, as smooth as he was, it was like you feel a little bit better about the injury prospects, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, when you're not mm-hmm. seeing a guy like straining. So, yeah.
It's easy stuff, right? For him, for a guy that's 6'7, where some of those guys could look awkward, like you said. Like, it's easy. Everything he does looks easy.
And the, I mean, the ADP is kind of what you admit. So, is this like maybe a best ball, like 50 type of guy? Like,
absolutely. I'd be grabbing him in the back end of every single best ball that I do. If you do a best ball with me, please don't snipe me on Andrew Painter.
But a gladiator guy because of just the risks.
You can't be on a 23-man roster unless, like, it's announced soon that he has a good shot for the opening day rotation, will make the opening day rotation, which I think will get chatter come spring because, like you said, like, the Phillies are going all in, man. Like, they have no reason. This guy got to 100 innings already last year.
Bailey Falter blocking him. I know he had kind of good moments, but
why waste those bullets, right? Like, it's different with pitchers. Like, you don't want those innings to go to waste in the minors. And from the looks of it, it looks like he could be ready. So,
I've heard people, Steve, saying that it's almost a coin flip, or people who follow prospects very closely saying that it's a take your pick between like Grayson Rodriguez and Andrew Painter. So it's like, that's where I'm wondering, is there any, you know, is there any pitching prospect that's definitively better than him? I think some people are saying, no, there's not.
No, I think you can make an argument for him over Grayson. You might be in the minority, but I wouldn't necessarily disagree with you.
Yeah, well, it's a really good one. Just kind of jumping around a little bit, I gotta check in on moving way up the draft board. I was a little surprised to see that Goldschmidt is down at almost pick 30 here.
Same price where he was last year, sort of, right? Like,
yeah,
I have last year's up. Let me look it up.
Yeah, and while you're looking that up, going to Goldie's player page on Pitcher List, you know, 35 homers, 221 runs plus RBIs, 7 steals. I get that the guy is in his age 35 season, but he's pretty much hit 300, if not more. Last year he hit 317. He's hit 300 for 3 seasons in a row. And man, there's just like this tax. Like, I really don't understand when you put him next to Freddie Freeman why Freeman's ADP would be at 15. And Goldie is double that when same position. And, you know, Freeman had a low homer output last year. So I think there's just a little bit of that ageism, or if it's kind of the vanilla factor, or people thinking that he might get 3 steals and not 7 or 10. But I think I would be thrilled if I got Goldschmidt pick 4 of the 3rd round, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, he was pick 48 last year, so basically kind of bumped almost essentially around, right? Like 18 picks, you know, in a 15 team, that's close to it. It's close to around, close enough at least. So
he's probably like top 5 by the player rate, Razzball player rate.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah, maybe that's a good draft. This, not that, with Freeman or even Vlad, essentially. If you want to say, you know, grab your first baseman and Goldschmidt a few rounds later and load up on like a slightly more scarce position like third base or something in the early rounds. So I think that's a good call too.
It's playing with the numbers a little bit, but he is closer in ADP to Matt Olson than he is to Vlad right now on these boards, and that's to me doesn't speak to the fact that he led all first basemen last year. So that's just kind of a side note, but either way, you're paying up, and we both like that top tier for first baseman as well. So we are going to get into some more guys that we feel are going a little bit too low or a little bit too late, but we're going to take our second ad break here. We'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, I saw this one on the rundown, and I was pleased. This was a name I threw out when I guested on the Triple Play podcast with David Mendelsohn and Art and those guys over there. But I was a little nervous to throw it out because I feel like there's some industry fatigue on Mr. Aaron Ashby with an ADP of 230. So just tell me everything I want to hear about why you feel like Ashby is going too late.
Yeah, this one's inspired by Jordan White of Pitcher List and In the Deep podcast at Bunt Singles on Twitter. Today, or Tuesday, as we were recording this, he just was tweeted out doing some research and discovered this disgusting changeup from Aaron Ashby, and it's just a gif of one of the prettiest changeups that you could see that just falls off the table, and he got Wilson Contreras to swing and miss on it, which just reminded me about how nasty Aaron Ashby is. I think the numbers on the surface last year, the 4.44 ERA, the WHIP, which was, I think, 1.4, something like 1.43, which is, yikes, that is a tough WHIP. I think it's sort of creating a buying opportunity here, right? Like, everyone and their mother was in on Aaron Ashby as a sleeper last year, and you know, he had some awesome starts to start and then kind of hit a rough patch and looked like at times that he was breaking out and becoming this ace, but didn't fully put it together. But there's still a lot of things to like, right? Like the strikeout rate, it was close to 11 strikeouts per 9 at 26.5%. It looks like there could be some room for upside there. I know it was a small sample in 2021, but in the minors, he's had, you know, a 36% strikeout rate. I'm not saying he can get there, but maybe he could bump it up closer to 30. The walks were tough, but it was still just 9.9%. And, like, you know, we've seen a lot of guys with high walk rates that if they have this sort of stuff, and Ashby does, they can get around with it, you know, a la a Dylan Cease. You know, I know that whip was tough, but a 324 BABIP allowed, pair that with a 70% left on base percentage, you know, that's going to lead to a 444 ERA. But all of the area indicators have it, you know, much closer to like a 375, even his xFIP at 329. So, you know, it's more of a stuff play, right? Like, you know, he has four really good pitches, or, you know, or at least the breaking ball, the slider and the changeup are really good.
It's a great best ball play because when he's on, he's a machine. So if it can just... You let the algorithms kind of do the work for you on pick and starts. But, like, yeah, that a couple of things to piggyback, Steve. The fourth best ground ball percentage in the whole majors. So that right there, the strikeout, high strikeouts, high ground ball rate. You mentioned the 324 BABIP, the slider, which is his best pitch for sure, with a 19% swinging strike rate. The slider had a 364 BABIP, so getting extra unlucky there. Even the sinker, which is what kind of is the popular pitch to pick on with Ashby, had a 30.2 CSW. I mean, that's, you know, well above league average, and that's what induced all the ground balls. He throws at 96 miles per hour. Like, this is when it's working for Ashby, it's what an ace looks like. He had five starts with eight or more strikeouts. He had a gem of an outing, I believe it was against the Cardinals, where he struck out 12 batters in one outing, and he hasn't even been able to go that deep into games because of the control. So it's like, I know we said that this is the wrong exercise to play of, like, who is this year's Dylan Cease or, you know, Robbie Ray or whatever it is of, like, you know, just fix your control and then you can break out. But if Ashby does that and just gets a little bit luckier, ERA wise and WHIP, he just needs to get to like a 3.9 and a 1.25, and he's going to bring value just from the swing and miss stuff.
This type of profile does not need much to break out. Like, when you have this much swing and miss, when you're able to induce this many ground balls, you are not far away. And you know, at pick 230, I am taking that lotto ticket every time. Like, I you know, I could see Aaron Ashby being one of my most rostered players if he sticks around this cost in 2023.
Yep, just 24 years old, so there's plenty of development for Mr. Ashby. And in that same range, I gotta call out, because I'm curious on your thoughts, Steve, Andrew Heaney going at pick 232. This seems like another great lottery pick. You know, I know last year he started off good, and then he missed a lot of time with injury. But then when he came back, he basically put on just a lights out performance. I know it was with the Dodgers magic, but 35.5% K rate and a 6.1% walk rate. He had the ratios that Ashby did not, with a 310 ERA and a 109 WHIP. He brought the slider back for the first time since 2016, and he used it 32% of the time. Like, this is, you know, right now on his steamer projections, 140 innings, 162 Ks, a 357 ERA, and a 113 WHIP. If the only thing holding that down is the volume, that's not a bad bet in the 19th round to take off with the Rangers. And with the DeGrom on the side, it's like there could be some good clubhouse action going with that staff down there.
And Texas has had some success. You don't think of them as, you know, a team like even like Milwaukee or the Dodgers or, you know, the Rays, where you just sort of perk up whenever you hear them sign a pitcher. But they've had some success, especially with these veteran guys. You know, like Lance Lynn had his breakout, or, you know, his late stage breakout with Texas. John Gray, just an example, last year was really, really good. So they do well with these veteran type pitchers. It's just the injury risk for me. Like, that's the only difference, and why I'll probably have more Aaron Ashby, just because I think that he's a safer bet to throw more innings. I'm a firm believer of what Andrew Heaney did. Like, you know, I think the sweeper worked. He was great when he pitched last year for the Dodgers. Like, he figured something out. It's just a matter of him having to stay on the field, which, you know, I know that's a risk with every pitcher, but I'd bet on Ashby having some more innings than Heaney, just because of Heaney's history.
Yeah, more innings for sure. It could be a sneaky kind of IL play to free up the roster. You know, I don't hate it personally when I've got to move a guy to an IL, because it means I can go shop on the
fair
wire.
That's fair.
But yeah, I know what you're saying. And the hope for Ashby is that it's not so topsy-turvy, that either he has it or he doesn't. Because that's, I mean, you witnessed my agony on that, Steve, between him and Rowdy Tellez,
I feel like Ashby was the bane of your existence last year. You know, in our text chain, that was probably one of the most discussed player.
Ready to get hurt again on Ashby. And Heaney, also very, very interesting there. Again, shout out to the pitcherless player pages, where you can look at, you know, one of the things Nick Pollock cites the most is the high lock, which is the high location, which you want for fastballs, and then the low lock for breaking pitches, where it's the low location. And click of a button, you can see the league average. Heaney's high lock on his fastball, 58%. League average is 51%. So he's doing a great job of hitting high in the zone. And then with his sliders, a 72% low lock, compared to league average 63%. So he is following the blueprint that you want there, the old Blake Snell blueprint, high heat and low breaking stuff. So I think, both of those I'm pretty interested on. And, you know, when you look at names around them, it's not, you know, you picture yourself in July saying that Ashby or Heaney are lights out, and it just feels like you wouldn't be surprised if that happened. So I like both of those ones there.
Great elevator pitch. Anything else? Great elevator pitch. You got me in on both of them.
There we go. Well, Steve, those are some of the names that we wanted to highlight there. I know we still got a little bit of time left. Maybe we can pull up the risers and fallers list. I know a good tweet that you've found out there and shared with Frank Stampfl, former guest on the show. Frank, if you're listening, always love your stuff out there. But Frank put out the risers and fallers, and, you know, there's a lot of kind of noise here. Some of it's just opportunity and movement or injury with like a Bryce Harper. But I think a couple that are interesting on the risers, in my opinion, starting with Zach Eflin. This is one with his move to the Rays. I mean, you just talked about how the Rays have the reputation of, you know, basically pulling off magic with any pitcher that comes in. Think of Charlie Morton. Think of a long list of other guys. But Eflin, you know, it was just the shortened season of 2020 when we saw Eflin with a 28% K rate. And I believe the walk rate, which has always been good, was just at like 6%. So that 22% K minus BB isn't so long ago. He's got a good curveball. He gets some whiffs with both that and the fastball. I'm interested here, Steve. His ADP shifted from 398. It's moved all the way up to 318. I think we can expect that'll continue to go, you know, higher and higher, to a point where he's probably going to be, you know, somewhere in the 200s by draft season, right? Mm-hmm.
Agreed, definitely. And just for clarity, this is November to December ADP, so it's a comparison of November to December. And, you know, like we said, there is some noise in there. It's probably mostly just like draft champion stuff in November, and then a mix of a few more leagues, like we said early in the show. But yeah, I mean, Eflin has elite control, and the Rays do well with those sort of guys. You know, look at Drew Rasmussen with that low walk rate, what they're able to get from him. Jeffrey Springs, things like that. So as soon as the Rays signed him, my Spidey senses or my Rays senses started tingling. and I'm definitely interested. Like you said, Eflin was really good and a good fantasy player before those injuries sort of derailed his last 2 years, but he still has that elite skill. And if there's a team to get the most out of like one elite skill, that's his control. It's the Rays. So I'm definitely interested and can sort of see him as like a good pair to a Heaney and an Ashby, right? Like sort of a more of a floor play. I know there is some injury risk still with Eflin, but I don't think there's as much like minor recurring sort of things. You know, hopefully he's just like past what he's dealt with. I know he's had some pretty bad knee issues and things like that. So the Rays do like to sign injured guys and try and get the most out of them too. So who knows? Maybe they have a plan for him there to keep him healthy. They were able to get a good amount of innings out of like Corey Kluber last year, right? So it's always good when the Rays sign a guy who would be interesting on his own. Yeah, I'm in on the rise for Eflin. And, you know, other things on there, it's like, you know, closers that signed that got a job, you know, some prospects that are getting some hype, things like that. So, you know, it's still some interesting takeaways. You know, shout out to Frank to putting together that list. And I'm sure we'll see some even cooler ADP market reports and risers and fallers as we get into the full swing of draft season.
Absolutely. Give Frank a follow. If you're not following him, what are you guys doing? It's @Roto_Frank. And we'll be keeping an eye on more movers throughout the offseason. But Steve, I think that kind of wraps us up here. I know we got some exciting drafts ahead of us, and we'll probably be on the clock tomorrow morning. Do we want to give any spoilers, talk a little live chatter on who we're liking for our next prospect draft or minors draft guy here?
Yeah, I guess because we could sort of do a little live workshop here. Like I know we're working off a nice list here, but you know, because we're in no danger of actually getting sniped. I do want to save some names for
we'll get a guest on the prospect show
that we will have coming up. But a guy that I definitely want to potentially snag on this turn is Andy Rodriguez of the Pirates. I know you sort of popped when I brought up his name in the chat, but and there was another tweet. I wish I saved it. I forget who it was by, but it basically just broke down his WRC plus and, you know, by age and for being, you know, as young as he is as age and basically being better than 30%, better than league average. That was a hard one for me to come out. It's like almost impossible for him not to be a really good hitter with just the WRC pluses he's put up at his respective age to level. So he is a super exciting prospect. He came over in a trade from the Mets that looks like it might be something that they regret relatively soon. I know they have Francisco Alvarez, but Andy Rodriguez looks like an absolute star in the making. And it's funny because, you know, the Pirates spent a first overall pick on a catcher as well.
Yeah, and it's kind of an eye roll that didn't they bring in
Henry Davis
Hedges?
Yeah,
then they brought in Austin Hedges or something, and it's
proximity wise, yeah, they'll probably be closer to when the Pirates are actually good, which who knows if they ever will be, but probably not this year. But
I like it,
an
though,
exciting
man.
Prospect
a catcher,
nonetheless.
Okay, and the other one, and I got to shout Chris Welsh over at Prospect One. He's given great tidbits all the time on this stuff, but somebody that he is highly in on that really got my attention is Tamar Johnson, another Pirate.
Are we going Pirate?
We might be going Pirate, man. That's a bold move, but yeah, this guy just like 60 power, 60 hit. I think that, you know, his like OBP skills kind of play up in this league with our settings, so... Yeah, I think, you know, Steve, since we got the swing pick, we might be falling into a habit of, you know, basically going Steve and Van, each take one, but
I like
it. Tamar is 18 years old, so you know, you talk about proximity. Yes. And he's a little guy at 5'7", but yeah, that future projection of 60-60 on hit and power is very tempting. And you know, man, I think baseball's about ready for the Pirates to have a team that isn't a complete laugh on the diamond. So you know, even as a Cardinals fan, it's like,
yeah,
come on, Rolanzi got us thinking, and now it's like
they're compiling the prospects correctly. At least there's a lot of exciting guys. Obviously, you know, he's not technically truly a prospect, but one of the most exciting guys in the majors is on their team already, in O'Neill Cruz. So
yes,
there's a lot of fun stuff that is happening and will happen in Pittsburgh with the farm system they've built there.
Okay, well, who would have thought we'd end on pirate, but that is it, folks. Episode 83, Wins Above Fantasy, a little bonus pod. Thank you guys for tuning in. As always, you guys can find us every other week, so we will be back on next week, next Friday. And yeah, we're gonna look to have kind of a prospects dedicated episode and hopefully get a guest on. So we gotta figure that out, Steve, but it should be some good times ahead here.
Yeah, a prospect for redraft leagues for clarity. So just guys, you know, like my boy Andrew Painter there, that we'll definitely talk about on that show.
For sure.
So looking forward to that.
So thanks guys for tuning in. If you made it this far, we would really appreciate if you guys go out and subscribe, leave us a rating, review on Apple, Spotify, wherever you guys listen. But as a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I am at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. Wins Above Fantasy, episode 83. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Thanks for listening, guys. Happy official start of draft season.
And Happy New Year, too.
And Happy New Year, too. Yeah, that draft season is more important.
Less important.
Yeah, exactly. Later.